This is Donna Sebo. And, yes, I know the schedule's a little bit different today, but that's what makes life interesting here on BBS Radio. So we've got a full hour, again, of mind power for you, and you're not going to want to miss any of it. Now, what I'd like to encourage you to do is write down our toll-free telephone number, because you'll have an opportunity to call in later on if you so desire. Here is the number, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. So many of us have questions about what goes on in life once we're gone. But more than that, there's a lot of the unknown and so often fear when it comes to talking about people passing away or various experiences that someone might have relative to that. We have a fascinating guest, Mr. Bruce Moen, and he has a book called Afterlife Knowledge Guidebook. Bruce, where are you located? Where are we talking to you from?
I'm in Denver, Colorado.
You are in Denver, Colorado. All right, now, Bruce, I wanted to ask you a question. What is your background, and what is it that caused you? Actually, it's two questions I'd like to ask you. What is your background for my listening audience, and what is it that made you decide that this was a topic that you wanted to really dedicate a lot of time, effort, and an interest into and research into?
Well, background-wise, I'm a semi-retired mechanical engineer, worked in research and development a number of years, so I have sort of a science, logical-minded background. And as to what drew me to this topic, it really started, I suppose, like most people, except I was very young when I asked myself the question, where was I before I was here, and what am I supposed to do while I'm living here, and where do I go when I leave here?
Now, how old were you when you asked yourself that question?
Probably 5 or 6 years old the first time I remember doing it, wandering
around
looking at this world.
That's pretty young.
Well, curiosity was strong, always.
Amazing. All right, so when you ask yourself that question, here you are 5 or 6 years of age, and I think most people would say, gee, I was so busy playing, who ever gave a thought to it? Who cared? But here you are with your analytical mind, your inclination towards science and research. Why, where did you go from there? I mean, here you are asking such a profound grouping of questions at this young age.
Well, I really didn't make any progress toward finding answers until much later in life. In my early 20s, I remembered having a recurring daydream that happened when I was about 5 or 6, and it happened once or twice a week for months. And that particular daydream, it turned out to be memory of what would best be described as living in another time, in another place, in a different body. And so somewhere in my mid-20s, I suppose, for me, this concept of reincarnation became very real. I felt I had an answer to my first question. Where was I before I was here? Well, I had a pretty clear understanding of that particular place and that particular time. And I began to focus on my next question. What am I supposed to do while I'm here? And I will submit that nobody in their early 20s is even equipped to ask the question, much less answer it. And so I skipped it and moved on to, where do we go when we leave here?
So here you are, you're asking questions all of this time. Now, in the interim, now you talked about this daydream that you had, a live daydream. Could you explain that to some of our listeners to give them an understanding of what that can be? Because I've known different people that will have a very common comfort zone with dreams, but the daydream experience where it's like your mind opens up to, for all intents and purposes, an internet stream, and it's playing all of these pictures for you. Patton had experiences like that. But there's a number of very famous people that have publicly acknowledged having these experiences. What was yours?
Well, in my case, excuse me just a second, I'm going to have to cough here. In my case, at the age of 5 or 6, I would be doing things little boys do, like playing in a sandbox with road graders and trucks. And all of a sudden, it would be nighttime. And I would enter into a very, very real dream in which I was standing at the foot of some stairs at the back corner of a house, standing in an alleyway. And I would sort of join into this experience from the perspective of being in the body of the person there, walked up the stairs that were attached to the back of the house to a landing on the second floor, opened the door and looked inside, and I could clearly see inside the room. It was a single room, not very large. A set of dressers on the left side with candles burning on the far wall. A light cotton curtain gently fluttering, like maybe the window was open or there's no window.
Mm-hmm.
And on the right-hand side, there was a huge brass rail bed, and there was a woman in the bed. And as a 5 or 6 year old, I had no idea what it was went on from there, but I knew I enjoyed whatever it was, until I heard heavy footsteps coming up those same stairs. I had come up just a little while ago. And when the door opened, I mean, all this is being experienced as a dream, and almost to the point of being a lucid dream, except I really didn't have any control over what happened. It just repeated over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
When the door opened up, I saw a man standing silhouetted against the night sky, and I was absolutely terrified. I knew if he got a hold of me, I was dead or worse. And I would jump up out of the bed and run and dive headfirst for the window. And as soon as my fingertips touched that white cotton curtain, the daydream would just end.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be back in my sandbox playing with my road graders and trucks. And as a 5-year-old, I really didn't have any feeling that was anything out of the ordinary. It was just like having a dream during the nighttime, but it would just occur at random for, like I say, several times a week for months.
Now, your book, and for those of you who are just tuning in to the broadcast, we're listening to Bruce Moen, Afterlife Knowledge Guidebook. And he just shared a very personal experience with us that was what some people might call, as he said, a lucid dream, but there was nothing he could do. It's like he's watching a rerun in his head. And I know I've met many, many people that have gone through experiences like this. Now, Bruce, with this, now in your 20s, you had certain experiences. Here you are as a mature individual putting together this guidebook. When did you feel that it was important for you to be able to do this? And we've got about a minute and a half before we go to break, and we come back and we'll go into some of the information that you give in your book. But when you went through your periods of your 20s and your 30s, were there other incidences that that made you decide that this was an area you wanted to explore more?
Yes, and in fact, I did a lot of reading, trying to first come up with some idea of if there is a place we go after we die, where should I go looking for it? And in my looking for it, I eventually came to the conclusion that if there was such a place, it was in the same neighborhood we go when we dream. And so I began to try to learn to do lucid dreaming, feeling that if I could do this, then I maybe could, in a lucid dream, look around the neighborhood and find someone to talk to. And in talking to them, maybe find out whether the place was real or not. Eventually, I found the works of Robert Monroe, who many of our listeners may know about. He wrote, his first book was called Journeys Out of the Body. He was an out-of-body traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And sometime later in my mid-30s, I discovered he had an institute in Virginia and went there, attended several six-day programs, one of
all right,
which was
excuse
called
me, Bruce,
sure.
I want to stop you right there. I hate to interrupt you. We are going to go to a break, however. When we come back, we're going to hear more about this experience from this facility that he went to. We're also going to give you a couple of tips. Now, again, my guest is Bruce Moen, Afterlife Knowledge Guidebook. This is Donna Sebo, our Hour of Mind Power. Don't you go away now. You're not going to want to miss any more of this. We'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I want to remind those of you that are just tuning in, my guest Today is Bruce Moen, his wonderful book, Afterlife Knowledge Guidebook. Now, Bruce, you were talking about finding this gentleman, Mr. Monroe, and you started taking some lessons from him because he was very much involved in some particular areas of discipline that to the Western mind seems a little foreign. Continue on with your story.
Sure. Attending his institute, I discovered a program called Lifeline. This is a program that purported to teach people how to make contact and communicate with and provide assistance to those who have passed on. I attended the program and spent the next 3.5 years trying to gather some evidence to prove to myself that it wasn't just all some grand self-deceptive hoax. Having eventually done that and convinced myself this afterlife place exists, the next high point in the story is being invited to speak at a conference for Nexus magazine in Sydney, Australia.
Ooh.
And after speaking about my experiences and what I had learned to do and the places I'd explored and what I'd found, the fellow who invited me said, Bruce, you really should develop a workshop to teach other people how to do what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is how I began putting together what ultimately became the Afterlife Knowledge Guidebook.
Now, if someone wanted to explore this, and we're going to have some people that are listening that are going to say, Donna, you're in outer space here. This is really woo-woo stuff. I don't know if I can handle this. You're a scientist. You are a man who has been dedicated to dealing with facts and disciplines of various levels. What would you recommend to someone that wants to explore this arena? Because there are so many people that I've talked with through the years that when a loved one passes away or there's various experiences they might have, what would you say to someone that says, I want to do just like you did. I want to explore. What would be the first step you'd recommend?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is to understand that our perception is something that's not well understood, and that what we really need to be able to do is find a way to verify that what we're experiencing is real. We'll talk about how to do it in just a moment. But one of the things that I really stress to people is something I'll call a basic premise, and that is that if you want to learn to explore whether or not there is such a place and communicate with deceased loved ones, you need to first find a way to make contact and communicate with such a person, someone who you know to be deceased. And in that contact and communication, gather some information that you have absolutely no way of knowing except by that contact. And then, here in the physical world, try to find a way to verify the accuracy of that information. A silly example might be that you attempt to communicate with someone who's known to be deceased, and they tell you they had a dog, and it was a small chihuahua, and it was black and white instead of brown, and gave its name. If you can find a relative of that person and ask them, did he really have such a dog? If the information is verified, then you've gathered some evidence that your experience is real. And I stress that it's really important to find a way to verify that your experience is real. Now, as to how to do this, one of the key things to understand is that we use imagination as a means of perceiving. For so long, I was under the mistaken belief that the word fantasy and imagination were just two different words that meant the same thing. I discovered that actually imagination is the tool we can use to perceive things that are fantasies or perceive things that are real. And so as a how-to tip for someone who would like to make contact with, say, with someone you know who has passed on, what I suggest is that in a quiet place where you won't be disturbed by ringing telephones or other people, sit down, close your eyes, and relax. You can use whatever relaxation method you're familiar with. And then begin to remember a time that you were with the person you want to contact. Imagine perhaps a time you were together in a restaurant having dinner. As you do this, do as much as you can to imagine or pretend that you are actually at this dinner. I don't mean that you have to see the restaurant and see the person, but remember what the person was wearing. Remember what they looked like. Remember the conversation that you had with them. Remember things you said, things they said. Remember what the table looked like. Remember the surroundings. All of these things are used to stimulate the imagination. And as you're doing this, what you're looking for as you literally pretend a conversation with a person
mm-hmm.
is for something unexpected to happen. For example, you might remember that in the conversation you were speaking about your cousin, Michelle. And as you pretend the conversation with the person and you're talking about the cousin, Michelle, maybe the person in your imagination that you're visiting with suddenly says something about, you know, Michelle has been ill for the last 3 days. She's got pneumonia. She's in the hospital, and I really hope she comes through this okay. Well, it was something unexpected that happened. It wasn't something that you were certain you pretended. It probably feels like you pretended it. But make a note of it. Write it down. Because after you've had this imaginary conversation, you can try calling your cousin Michelle to discover whether or not the information you were told is true. And if it turns out your cousin Michelle does have pneumonia and has been in the hospital for 3 days, and you've had no way of knowing that except by the contact in this imaginary conversation, you have some evidence that that person gave you the information, some evidence that person still exists somewhere. So a basic technique of using imagination to create what begins as a fantasy conversation, remembering details of what was said and the surroundings, and being observant for when something unexpected happens. And when that unexpected thing happens, play along as if it's real. You might, for example, say, gee, Michelle's been ill for 3 days. Which hospital is she in? Maybe you will hear which hospital. Or you might ask, gee, what's her doctor's name? Play along as if it's real. See where it leads. Gather as much information as you can. Because only in that way, after the experience, will you have the opportunity to try to verify it. And it's a really important step.
Bruce, how has this changed your life, your investigation in this?
In many ways. The first one is that I have absolutely no fear of death. I've been doing this actively since 1991. I know where I'm going and what I'll be doing and after I leave this world, so I have no fear of death at all. It's slowed down the pace of my life. You know, when you believe, as many do, that we only go around once and you've got to get everything done in one lifetime, sometimes we tend to hurry through our life and not really pay attention, not really live our lives. One of the effects it's had is that I understand that the time I live this lifetime is the blink of an eye in the eternity of all of our existence.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you can tell, Bruce is a very interesting man, and his experience is quite extensive. His wonderful book is called Afterlife Knowledge Guidebook. Now, he's got a website, and Bruce, give us this website so people can explore this more if they'd like to do that.
Sure. It's www.afterlifeknowledge.com.
That's afterlifeknowledge.com. Bruce, you have been so involved with this, as you said, since 1991. How do you feel this can make a difference in other people's lives? What is the gift that your book will give to the reader?
For people who learn and practice the simple system of concepts and techniques and exercises given in the book and begin to explore beyond physical reality, it can help them prove to themselves that this life is not the only existence we have. The fear of death that drives so many people to do so many crazy things can disappear, and that is a very important piece. another very important piece for me is sometimes there's unfinished business with friends or loved ones who've passed on, being able to communicate with them directly and to resolve those issues is also a very big piece that can be very healing. For example, just briefly, a woman who came to my workshop, her 13-year-old son had died in an accident unexpectedly, and she, as any parent would be, was devastated.
Yes, I can imagine.
She's learned to make contact and communicate with her son, and if you talk to her now, she would say, it's more like he just moved to a city some distance away. We still communicate. We still talk to each other. I know he's all right. I know what he's doing, and I don't worry about him anymore.
What a wonderful gift that is for a mother. Well, for anyone, really.
Yes.
And as you can tell, Bruce is very passionate about what he has dedicated his life to as a former scientist. This is something that has enriched his life, and his business of life is about enriching as many other people's lives as he possibly can. His wonderful book, Afterlife Knowledge Guidebook. Bruce Moen, and his last name is spelled M-O-E-N. Bruce, it's been a delight having you. And again, your website is afterlifeknowledge.com. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure.
It has been a delight having you. Well, this is Donna Sebo. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, lots of good things to share with you. Telephone lines will be open 877-876-5227 right here on bbsradio.com. Don't you go away. More good things to share. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and this is the Hour of Mind Power. We've got a little bit of a different schedule today, but that doesn't make any difference. Telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And just give me a buzz at this toll-free number, 877-876-5227. Now, we did want to give out some information. First of all, I want to let you know that starting the 1st of July, the Donna Sebo Show is going to be heard at 11 a.m. to noon Pacific Coast time, and it's 11 to noon, so be sure you change your schedule for listening and make a note about that. Also, we have got our shows now that are being archived, so if you've missed the show, hey, all you have to do at your leisure is to go into bbsradio.com. Go into the list on the right side of the homepage screen and tap on the Donna Sebo Show, and you can go in and you can listen to any of the shows. Actually, any of the shows on BBS Radio you'll be able to listen to at your leisure, which I think is awesome. Also, I wanted to let you know that we have a radio station that's carrying the Donna Sebo Show. For those of you in the state of Washington, it's East Hill Radio, and it's playing the show, and it's on 1700 AM, I believe that's what it is, and so whatever information I have on this, I'll be sure to share it in my email newsletter. So you'll be seeing some of that coming out in the newsletter. And if you want to subscribe, just remember, all you have to do is send me an email. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. And it's such a wonderful opportunity when you get busy and you say, gee, I don't want to miss this, I don't want to miss that, that you can go into bbsradio.com and there are the shows. You'll find out all the things that are going on. By the way, I also wanted to let you know we have got a dynamite guest tomorrow. Margaret Emery is her name. And we have a real live agent that's going to be on the air with us. And she's got a book, Ask an Agent. So if you or anybody that you know has wanted to get into showbiz, this is the lady who has been involved with it for a number of years. Not only has she been an actress herself, very successful in that, but she decided she wanted to become an agent. So she just does all kinds of neat things, and you're going to want to know about her. Also, next week, we have got a dynamic lineup. We're going to be talking with Margaret McCraw. We're going to be talking about how you can tune into love. Are any of you out there wondering how you make that happen? Well, you're not going to want to miss Margaret. Also, this is the time of year where people are moving. They're selling homes. They're buying homes, packing stuff up. They're going where. We're going to learn how you can have an easier move. Kathy Kopotas is going to be with us, and she's going to give us all kinds of wonderful tips. So you're going to want to have your pad of paper and pen, as you usually do with the Donna Siebert Show, because you never know what you're going to hear that you're going to want to make a note about. But that one is really good. She's got some marvelous, marvelous tips. And then, do beliefs work? Well, Ray Todd is going to share his insights on that, and then we're going to be talking with Steve Tobman about unhypnosis. Have you ever been hypnotized? Well, you might be surprised at how you've hypnotized yourself, maybe into certain habits. Well, we're going to find out how you can get rid of that. And then we're going to be talking with Barbara Stanny, Overcoming Under-Earning. Overcoming Under-Earning. She's a dynamic lady, and we're going to be just dealing with the business of being successful. So we've got a real good lineup. And, of course, there's just so many wonderful, wonderful guests that we've got coming up. We've already got people booked all the way through the month of July and into August. So we've just got so many interesting people to share with you. And always delighted to have you be a part of the show, too. So give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. I received an email from someone, and this was so cute. I just had to share it with you today. This is about a little girl who was sitting on her grandfather's lap as he was reading her a bedtime story. I just love kids. I just think they have some of the most wonderful comments to make. And this one is really good. From time to time, she'd take her eyes off of the book that her grandfather was reading to her, and she'd reach up to touch his wrinkled cheek. And she was alternatively stroking her own cheek, and then she'd touch his cheek, and she'd stroke her cheek again, and finally, she turned around, and she looked up at her granddad, and she said, "Grandpa, did God make you?" Of course, he looks down with her big smile, and he says, "Yes, sweetheart, God made me a long time ago." "Oh." She looked at him thoughtfully. "Grandpa, did God make me too?" "Yes. Yes, indeed, honey. God made you just a little while ago." So she touched his face again, and she touches her face again. She looked at him, and she smiled. She said, "You know what, Grandpa? I think God's getting better at it, isn't he?" Don't you just love kids? Their perceptions are just so good. I just love it. I just think it's marvelous. Yes, yes, yes. She was a better model. Yes, she was absolutely correct. Donna Siebert, give me a buzz if you'd like for me to share my intuitive skills with you. I'll be glad to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 877-876-5227. Traveling, this is the time. You, I'm sure, are getting ready to go on a trip, visit with friends, family, explore. The weather's gorgeous. Well, how can you feel safe? And sometimes people like to travel by themselves, and you want to know how to do this and not get apprehensive. And we are so fortunate in this country of ours. We usually can go just about anywhere fairly safely. But even if you wanted to travel overseas, this is just some tips that will come in handy. And the American Society of Travel Agents has 5 recommendations. You know, there's about 72 million of us that travel every year. And a lot of women don't mind traveling alone, or guys either. So what can we do? Well, find a hotel that is really going to be a place that you want to stay in. B&Bs also are great, too. You'll find that if you stay at bed and breakfast, they have this wonderful, homey atmosphere where you can find a hotel or even a motel that's going to be that way. You don't have to stay at real big places, but lots of times these smaller places are just absolutely wonderful, but you want the right kind of an environment, and I think that's very true. I know there's a facility I've stayed at, my goodness, when I go up to Alaska for like 25-plus years, because they are just so attentive, and it's not a real big place. They know me, and it's just delightful. I'm able to do work and see clients and do all kinds of things. It's just wonderful. It's like going and visiting a family. It's just really great. So choose your room also. You want to make sure, for safety purposes, that you don't stay in a room with easy access to the outside on a ground floor. You are near a stairwell or with windows leading to a balcony or a fire escape. You don't stay something in a room that's real, real easy access. It's just basic common sense, and you can make the request, and they'll be able to honor that. Also, remember to travel light. Oh, boy, was this one that I had to learn. Not only are you going to avoid lugging real heavy bags, it used to be when porters would see me coming, I'm petite, when they'd see me coming at the airport, they'd go to lift a bag, and they'd look at me, and they'd try to lift the bag, and they wondered if I was a professional weightlifter. Well, of course, now we've got regulations on our bags. You can't carry more than 50 pounds in a bag, but you just need to be aware. You want to make sure that your luggage is easy to handle, dependent on where you are going to. So make sure it's got wheels on it. Yes, I know most people do, but you'd be amazed at how many people lug pieces of luggage around. It's really a pain. So if you have a piece of luggage that's easy to move and wheels are great, that's going to be a good thing. Also, don't advertise with real expensive bags. I say use common sense here. You want to be subdued. You don't want to set yourself up where thieves are going to want to mark you as a target. Also, a good thing to remember, make sure when you're going through, because when I travel, I have to remember this. If you've got a laptop or anything like that, you want to make sure that the bags that you carry on the plane, that you can manage them well. I made the mistake once of overpacking my carry-on bag. When I say that, it was weight. And sometimes when you get on the planes, you have your overhead bins, and they can be up pretty high. Fortunately, I had a 6'3" guy behind me, so where I'm so short, he was able to pop it in for me. But it was cumbersome. It was very heavy. So just remember, when you are in airports and when you get on planes, every plane can be a particularly different style, especially with overhead space, so you want to be wise with that. And be smart about your ID tags. If you've got an office or P.O. box, use that rather than your home address on your luggage tags to prevent identity theft and maybe some other problems. Or use tags with flaps. But again, it's just good sense here. And you want to be sure that when you ask for room service, that you ask the waiter to leave the food outside the door rather than come in. You want to have this person knock to let you know it's there, and you want to be sure that the person that is bringing the stuff to your room is a bona fide employee. And, you know, they are finding that when it comes to traveling, 70% of all travel decisions, from what to do to where to stay, are made by women. And, you know, for a lot of years, they ignored that. Now the hotel industries have started paying attention, and they're really pleased with the results because there are more and more women that have gotten involved with business. And that's so important. These are things you need to do to just remember. I wanted to share a thought with you also, and that is by a thought by Zig Ziglar. And so many of us are aware of this man. He's just been renowned as a motivational speaker. And I found this particular quote by him, and I really, really liked it. And this is how it reads. That some people say that motivation does not always last. Well, neither does bathing, and that's why we recommend it daily. Well, I think it's true because no matter how optimistic you can be, we all have days when we don't particularly feel motivated to get things done. Well, if you have that understanding within yourself that it's going to be up to you to be motivated to get things done, then you're pretty much going to pick up the ball and move with the action that is necessary. But it's something we have to be aware of. We have to nurture it. We have to culture it in our lives so that it becomes a habit. It's amazing how quickly we can adopt new habits. They say it takes about 21 days to absorb a new habit. Well, sometimes it takes a little bit longer, depending on what that habit is. But when you do something frequently enough, eventually you just do it subconsciously, where it's not even an effort. And I think back when I was learning how to cook, when I wanted to do something and I'd watch somebody and I'd go, oh my goodness, am I ever going to be able to do what they do? Of course, with practice. Now, maybe you're all thumbs in the kitchen, but you might be good at something else, but it's practice, isn't it? The more you do something consistently and you make sure that you aim to do it extremely well, the better and easier you get at it until you don't, it's just a no-brainer. I can remember at one job, there was a particular speed. I was extremely efficient at doing certain manual things. And in the beginning, when I started doing this particular kind of work, I really had to think about every single step because it was totally foreign to me. And there were multiple applications of steps that had to be done. And so I would have to make sure I thought every single action through. Well, eventually, I ended up being so incredibly fast that I set records in some respects. And then I found I had an opposite problem. If I had to stop and think about what I had to do, it then presented a problem for me. Then I'd goof up, because I was trying to teach someone else how to do it. And I had to very methodically slow everything down. And it's amazing how you can go the opposite direction and just all of a sudden go, wow, how come it's so hard for me? It's a fascinating phenomena to observe. So don't be impatient with yourself if you're learning something new. Realize after you do it often enough, you'll be able to do it so efficiently and well that you won't even give it a second thought. You're just on automatic. It's like learning how to ride a bike. You do it well. You might fall down a few times. That's okay. Just pick yourself up and get on moving. Stay motivated. You do not want to lose that part of yourself at any time. Now, I wanted to share with you some information by Robert Simmons. He is such a wonderful man, such a neat guy. And he is a person that has studied stones for years. And he has a wonderful, wonderful book called The Book of Stones, Who They Are and What They Teach. And I'm hoping to have him as a guest sometime because he is just so knowledgeable. He's just delightful to talk with. But his schedule is quite busy. So he said, Donna, you can share this information any time you want. And by the way, if you wanted to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. We're going to talk about the Shaman Stone this afternoon. And I had no knowledge about the Shaman Stone. I didn't even know it existed. There's a lot of things I don't know that exist. And it is a stone that I would say, if I were to see it, is totally nondescript. But these stones are absolutely amazing. They're sandstone creations that are found on the north rim of the Grand Canyon in southern Utah. And they are naturally shaped like spheres, and their color is a medium brown. Now, they're not real big. They can be about, maybe less than a half inch to over 2 inches in diameter. And these were known by some Indians, a particular tribe called the Moqui Indians. These were known as the Moqui marbles, and the shaman stones were very much appreciated by the Moquis because they used these stones as talismans in their shamanic ceremonies. Now, Robert, in doing the research on this stone, on these stones, said that they were just wonderful tools for those that wanted to do something like shamanic journeying. And, of course, he went and got involved in the various shamanic practices, especially that this group of Indians did. And he said it also has been used for rebirthing, holotropic breath work, or other intense forms of transformational inner work. And he said they have a way of turning on one's inner radar, the part of the psychic which is aware of the contents of the subconscious and intuitively knows what one most needs to bring to your conscious self. So these are some things that if you have a curiosity about stones, I have a very dear friend that's been a passion of hers for years. She just has the most beautiful collection of stones from all over the country. And each stone has its own special story to tell. So these are, again, they're called the Shaman Stone, and its element is earth. It can be worked with all chakras, and the keywords are shamanic journeying, soul retrieval, polarity balancing, psychic protection, and intuition. So there's a lot of good information there. Just a little bit of stone trivia, if you will, that I thought I would share with you today, because I know so many of you do have an interest in that. Now, this is Donna Sebo. If you would like to chat with me this afternoon, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. Now, I wanted to share a little bit of information with you about how to get rid of an old computer. I am consistently amazed at how technology advance in how computers can be out of date in a very short period of time. But you know, there are a lot of people that are interested in having what you might consider outdated. Now, there are so many ways you can find a home for it. One, you can trade it in. There are computer makers like Hewlett-Packard and Gateway that will apply the value of your old machine towards a new one. It can save you $200 or more. And you can go to their websites. The first one is gateway.easytrade, and that's the letter E and then the letter Z, tradein.com, gateway.easytradein.com, or hp.com/United-States/trade-in. Let me share that one again. hp.com/United-States/trade-in. Then you can sell it. eBay sells nearly $3 billion worth of old computers every year. That's incredible. $3 billion of old computers every year. And all you have to do is go to pcsellingcenter.ebay.com. They'll give you the instructions, and they can even put you with an experienced auctioneer so you can make some money off of it. And you can also find organizations that would love to have computers. You know, there's schools, there's libraries, there's different places that will just love to have your equipment. And you can go to the National Christina Foundation. It's a charity that provides used computers to nonprofit groups. And this is their website, christina.org, C-R-I-S-T-I-N-A.org. And all you have to do is type in your zip code, and there will be schools and charities that come up for you to let know that you want to give them your aging PC. And this is a great thing. Senior citizen centers, too. You never know who's going to be interested in it. It doesn't have to just be taught. There's places where people would really appreciate having them. Also, any computer made in the last 5 years can handle internet surfing, emailing, and downloading music, and it's great for your kids. That way you'll keep your new machines memory-free and minimize the risk of viruses or spam. If it gets on your kids' stuff, you're going to say, that's fine, we'll just start all over again. It's no big deal. Also, if you don't find any of these avenues of interest, you can help the environment by recycling it. And there are businesses that will take your computers, and sometimes you have to pay for them to take. I know when we had some monitors, we had to pay them. I think it was $20 because the recycling, you just cannot dump it in the dumpster. There's all kinds of mercury and lead and different materials in there that are not safe to go into the garbage dump. So you just don't put them out with the trash anymore. And you can find out about an environmentally safe alternative option near you. Go to this website, eiae.org. That's the letter eiae.org. And you can get in touch with some place that's going to be able to recycle your computer. Now, don't forget, when you are letting go of your computer, your hard drive is packed with a lot of personal information, and you do not want that to go out to anybody. So make sure you wipe out all that old information before you toss your old machine. Now, there's a very easy way to do it. There's a free program called Derek's Boot and Nuke that will destroy all of the data. This is where you go to find out about this free program. And you go to dban, D like Donna, ban, B-A-N, dot, source4ge.net. Let me spell that out. And that's at http://, D like Donna, B like boy, A-N, dot, source, S-O-U-R-C-E, F-O-R-G-E, dot net, and you'll be able to download that free program that will erase all of your data off of your computer that you don't want. Well, this is Donna Sebo, and my goodness, we are going to be running out of time in just a moment. I want to remind you, tomorrow we're going to have a real live entertainment agent on the show with us. So if you know of anybody that has a passion for theater, for movies, wanting to do commercials, all this kind of stuff, then you're going to want to know about Margaret Emery and her book, Ask an Agent. We're going to have some giveaways, too, so you'll be able to call in and get one of her free books. So if you have anybody aspiring for show business, she's the lady you're going to want to hear. Well, I know we are just about out of time. It's been so wonderful to be with you, and we are going to have just a dynamic lineup of people to share with you every day. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't be afraid to explore. We had a wonderful guest, Bruce Mullen, today. Don't be afraid to explore the unknown. You have the opportunity to do what you want to do in this life. And when I say that, remember your mind belongs to you. Sometimes we have experiences in life we have to work through, but don't ever forget your mind. You as a person belong to you and nobody else. And one of the greatest things you can ever give yourself as a gift is enriching your own mind and your own life by expanding your world, expanding your knowledge, and not being afraid to take a risk and to explore that which may be new to you now, which may in time become old hat. So live your life with zest, because it's the best way to do it. God bless you. Have a wonderful day. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.